Chapter 17. Abduction. At first, no one knew what to do. Everyone was still trapped in their astonishment over the abduction of the captain and Lieutenant Travis off their own bridge. When the moment had faded, the first person to recover his senses was naturally Buck Wilmington. Buck bent over and picked up the comm badge on the floor. This was the captain's, Buck thought. Mary still had hers. Against hope, he tapped his comm badge.
Lieutenant Travis, do you read? Lieutenant Travis, come in.
There was only silence. He stared at the remaining comm badge briefly, the shock in his face visible as it was on every person presently on the bridge. After a short period of reflection, he returned to his science station and placed the comm badge on the panel as if they would guide his actions somehow. His movement prompted the others back to mobility and they too remembered their situation.
Ezra, try to scan for the captain and the lieutenant's life signs on board the enemy vessel.
Buck ordered, breaking the silence that threatened to overwhelm them all. The security chief nodded mutely. Ezra, equally stunned by what had taken place, was quickly moving to recovery. Years of professionalism returned to him in seconds, and when it did, so did the tough Starfleet persona he wore like a shield for moments such as these. He hurried back to his station and quickly keyed his instructions into the panel. After a few moments, Buck saw his face as it twist into a grimace of defeat.
I cannot locate them,
he declared through gritted teeth, frustrated at being so helpless.
The intruders' shields are too powerful for us to penetrate. I cannot even trace any life signs.
Calm down,
Buck ordered, wanting no one to come unhinged at a time like this. However, he understood the man's anxiety. Buck could confess to feeling some of it himself, although in theory he was meant to be in better control of it than anyone else. Unfortunately, it was hard to keep the persona of first officer intact when his oldest friend had been spirited away right in front of his eyes.
Commander,
Ezra spoke up.
Young Mr. Dunn is signaling from the main bridge. He is requesting the status of the saucer separation.
Inform JD to stand by.
Commander,
Ezra's voice interrupted his thoughts.
The enemy vessel is changing course.
Buck thought quickly, trying to decide what to do. Sensibly, it was prudent to return to Deep Space 5 and call in reinforcements. The intruder had proved twice they were more than a match for Starfleet technology. It would be logical to wait for other starships with far more experienced captains to handle this situation instead of him. He was an untried first officer who had no business taking on the intruder himself. It endangered the ship and his crewmates. However, even as Buck held that thought in his mind, another voice made itself heard, a voice that had nothing to do with probabilities of failure, the limitations of his experience, and the safety of logic. For once, Buck agreed with it.
Vin,
he said finally, and made peace with himself that whatever would happen, would happen. He would deal with the consequences later.
You will change our course and follow the intruder.
Yes,
Ezra Standish exclaimed inwardly. There had been a brief instance when he almost believed Buck would order them back to Federation space, abandoning the captain and Lieutenant Travis. Ezra was grateful he was not forced to act in event of that possibility. He knew they were incapable of doing nothing while the intruder put more distance between their two ships. Unfortunately, whatever elation he had was short-lived when he noticed the sensor readings emerging from his continuous scan of the enemy ship. The power buildup was unmistakable, even through its super-efficient shield. The configuration of the warp field being generated was unmistakable.
Commander, they're going to transwarp.
No sooner than the words had left his lips, Ezra saw the explosion of power propelling the intruder ship into nothingness. Within the blink of an eye, there was nothing behind them but empty space. There was a slight stillness in the blanket of stars behind the Maverick, when a final flare of light signaled the intruder's escape with its transwarp speed. For the second time in the hour, no one could say anything. Each one of them knew the reality of the situation. The chance of catching up to the intruder now was next to impossible. Even forcing the ship to follow at maximum warp would leave them days behind in a matter of hours. Buck said nothing, yet his stony feature seemed affected just the same. Julia was holding her hand against her lips, covering her open mouth. Ezra could not see Vin's face, but he could see the slackening in the officer of the con's posture, followed by his clenched fists against the helm console. Ezra could understand his frustration.
Commander, what do we do?
He asked finally, because no one else had the heart to.
Do we maintain pursuit?
Buck did not speak. He seemed to be concentrating hard on trying to produce an answer. When he released a loud, weary sigh, he knew he had found none.
We will drop to warp 8 and maintain pursuit. We can still track the enemy vessel by its transwarp signature.
Sir,
Ezra spoke softly. For the moment, he almost hesitated saying what he knew was his duty to say. Unfortunately, their personal feelings did not alter the circumstances of the present situation. He and Buck were Starfleet officers and at the moment, it appeared the senior officers as well. It was his duty to speak, no matter how much he disliked bringing this point to the first officer.
We may be able to track them, but we will be capable of doing little else. We have no real hope of catching them.
Buck faced him.
I don't believe in hope, Commander, and I'm well aware that the possibility of retrieving the Captain and Lieutenant Travis is slight. However, while we are able to track them, there is still a chance the Captain may be able to assist his own escape. I intend to give him every chance to save himself. We'll maintain this course.
Even Buck had to know how impossibly illogical that sounded, Ezra thought. However, he was pleased Buck had said that. As Buck made that declaration, Ezra saw that Buck's words gave hope to the rest of the bridge crew that the situation was not as bleak as it appeared.
Understood, sir.
Having said that, Buck walked towards the command chair. He stared at it for a moment, deciding that he did not feel inclined to sit in it even if the captain was no longer aboard. Finally, he took his place at the first officer's seat instead. Protocol or not, he was not prepared to fill that role in any capacity other than what was necessary for the moment.
Julia,
Buck responded. He did not look at her when he spoke. The engineer was acting as communications officer while JD was on the saucer section.
Please inform JD we will be aborting the saucer separation. We're also standing down from red alert. We'll remain in yellow alert for the time being.
Aye, sir.
The engineer nodded slowly and then reacted to fulfill that order. Buck was aware of the mood on the bridge at the moment. He wished more than ever that emotional distress caused by the captain's and Lieutenant Travis' capture could be kept to a minimum.
Ezra, get Alex up here. Inform her for the moment. She is acting first officer until we retrieve the captain.
Yes, sir.
Inform all departments I would like a status report within the next half hour and I need a meeting of the senior staff half hour following that.
Yes, Commander.
He said quietly.
Julia.
Buck continued dispensing orders.
Send a Priority 1 transmission to Starfleet Command. Attention Admiral Wellington. Inform the Admiral Captain Larrabee and Lieutenant Travis have been abducted by the intruder. We are currently in pursuit and will be traveling beyond communication range for the next 12 hours. Relay to the Admiral that we believe the intruder capable of monitoring all our transmissions and we will attempt to communicate when we are able.
Yes, sir.
Julia replied, although she seemed somewhat confused by Buck's statement.
Sir, I was not aware that our transmissions were being monitored.
Transmit the message as I have requested.
Ezra left her station and approached Buck.
Commander, I do not recall our communications being monitored.
He asked the question in a softer voice because Julia had brought up a very valid statement. As security officer, he had not detected any signs of monitoring and he would be the only one who would be able to make the determination if there were.
There is always that possibility. However, if the Admiral might form the opinion that we should return to Deep Space 5 immediately, then 12 hours is all we have to get the captain back.
I see.
He said mildly surprised.
I could be wrong here, but does that not interpret as a lie?
Buck cleared his throat and looked decidedly uncomfortable.
Unfortunately, yes. I will pay for it later.
Hopefully when they got the captain back. The mood at the senior staff meeting was grim. When he entered the briefing room, he noticed Ezra had assembled everyone already. There was no talking or hushed voices as everyone seemed to be deep in thought. The first officer took his usual place next to the captain's chair. Buck tried to ignore the empty space at the head of the table. The unoccupied seat belonging to the captain was a stark reminder of their loss. Despite their attempts to carry on as usual, he noticed everyone present inevitably shifting their gaze to and from that empty seat.
As you undoubtedly know by now, the captain and Lieutenant Travis were transported off the bridge during the course of our encounter with the intruder.
Buck announced, deciding it was best to get all questions on the table immediately.
Are they still alive?
Nathan Jackson asked first of all. His tone indicated he wanted no attempts at sparing their feelings. What he required and what Buck believed they all did, was the unabashed truth.
I think they are.
He answered honestly.
I don't understand.
JD exclaimed.
Why would they take the captain and Lieutenant Travis? What possible reason could there be for their abduction?
I do not believe they wanted Lieutenant Travis.
Ezra replied.
When the transporter beam enveloped the captain, she instinctively reached for him and was beamed away as well. I think taking her was an accident.
I agree with Ezra,
Buck added.
I believe that the object of the abduction was the captain only. It was chance that Mary was taken as well. It's why her combadge wasn't left behind. They probably didn't compensate for her.
Which is not a good situation in any case. If they abducted the captain, they must have some use for him. Unfortunately, they may not have the same for Lieutenant Travis. She may be a complication they are not prepared to deal with.
You mean that they might kill her?
Julia exclaimed, fearful for the blonde woman with whom she had become fast friends since arriving on the ship. No one liked the idea very much, but what Alex said made a certain amount of sense. It was a truth no one preferred to believe, but they had to face it, and unfortunately, Buck could not discount it.
We have to consider that possibility.
We've got to do something. We can't just let those monsters kill them. I've got a full sick bay of people who can attest to their barbarity.
Nathan, we are all worried about Captain Larrabee and Lieutenant Travis.
Josiah intervened before the doctor became any more upset.
The captain would not want us to come apart at a time like this.
His words placated Dr. Jackson momentarily, but not for long, Buck estimated. The doctor became very personal about those he served with.
Doctor, I assure you, everything that can be done is being done,
Ezra said gently.
We are keeping track of their transwarp signature and are maintaining the pursuit.
I realize that. However, is it not true that if the intruder does not drop to warp speed, we may never catch up with them?
Doctor,
Buck broke in.
We're maintaining pursuit and we will continue to do so until the situation changes. We're not abandoning the captain or Mary under any circumstances. However, you have to understand there are limitations to what we can do. The bridge crew is doing its very best to resolve this situation. Why do they want the captain though?
Vin mused, focusing on an issue no one had mentioned in all their discussions.
We know the intruder's purpose into this quadrant is scientific. Their behavior certainly indicates that they are conducting intensive studies of some sort. They kidnapped people on Colony 1 for a number of hours and raided their computer core prior to its destruction. This was repeated on Deep Space 5, although no one was abducted then. Their actions demonstrates their need for information, although to what end we cannot be sure. Before the captain was taken, the intruder changed its attack strategy.
I noticed that,
Ezra declared, remembering the sequence of events.
1 minute they were firing away at us, and then suddenly, they sent that probe. It was like they realized that we might be worth closer evaluation.
Exactly,
Buck answered.
Once their probe gathered its information, including the personnel records of everyone on board, it withdrew. Most likely to assess the data accumulated in order to plan their next action.
Abducting the captain,
Josiah answered.
And Lieutenant Travis as well.
This sounds even worse,
the doctor confessed, staring at Buck as an edge of horror crept into his face.
If everything you say is true, what in the name of hell are they doing to the captain and Lieutenant Travis?
Not even Buck could give him an answer. Chapter 18. Interrogation.
Chris, wake up.
He heard her voice in his ear. It might have been the first time she had spoken, or perhaps the last in a series of requests. Whatever the number, Chris Larrabee's mind was still too foggy to tell the difference. As lucidity crept in on him like a stranger in the night, thoughts moved through his mind with little consistency or any reasonable sense. For an absurd moment, he delighted in the sound of her voice against his ear. Chris savored the light wisps of her melodic voice against his skin until he was alert for all the wrong reasons. He wondered if her breath was capable of having a similar effect on the rest of him. The moment lasted briefly. Suddenly, his last memories returned to him like icy water splashing against his face. His growing awareness brought to life a swirling torrent of images that spanned hours but were compressed into mere seconds of real time. He sat up abruptly, an action he regretted doing almost immediately. His consciousness allowed the awareness of pain to announce itself as a most filthy headache. Instinctively, he reached for his brow, trying to recall a time when he suffered a similar affliction with such equal intensity. Unfortunately, this was not the morning after a particularly lively bachelor party, and this time his headache was definitely not self-inflicted. Part of its cause seemed to be the powerful beam of the strobe light he found himself staring at overhead. He could look at it for no more than a second because it was bright enough to burn out his corneas if he was not careful. Dropping his gaze to the floor, Chris attempted to filter out the stark glare from his eyes so he could see more than free-floating blobs of vibrant color. Adjusting his vision to the lighting took a few seconds, but when he was capable of seeing again, Chris Larrabee found Mary staring at him with concern.
I'm fine.
He responded to put her concerns to rest.
Just a little out of it.
Once he was fully in command of his eyesight, Chris observed their new surroundings. He had been lying on a flat piece of foam in the corner of a wide room. Not only were the walls this color, but also the ceiling and the floor. It reminded Chris about Alex's theory that the intruders were deranged scientists conducting experiments. This room certainly belonged in a hospital. It reeked of antiseptic or something similar and brought to mind his stay at Starfleet Medical. There were no windows or a door for that matter. The only distinguishable feature in the room appeared to be a small diamond-shaped panel on one of the walls. He wondered momentarily if the panel activated a yet unseen way out of the room. He could hear no other sound other than their breathing. There was no familiar hum of ship engines, no footsteps against the deck, nor any sounds that might indicate life beyond this prison. Despite himself, Chris found this quiet more disturbing than anything else that had happened so far. The last thing he remembered was the beam of light approaching him on the bridge of the Maverick. There was a moment of understanding, when he realized he had been its target. Following that was a disjointed memory of Mary placing her hand on his shoulder, trying to help him. He had tried to warn her, but the opportunity never came and they were both whisked away. The bridge disappeared around them both. After that, nothing coherent remained of the images. He remembered fingers around his arm and a sharp stab of pain, with Mary crying something vague in his ear. Instinctively, he rolled up his sleeve. Further up his arm, there was a slight blemish on his bicep that itched when he examined it.
What did they do to us?
He managed to ask and winced at the dryness of his throat. Mary brushed a strand of hair from her face. Most of her hair had unraveled from its tidy coiffure.
They injected us with some form of sedative.
She was trying to maintain her calm despite the nature of their predicament.
It leaves a lot to be desired.
He grumbled, massaging his aching head.
Have you seen them?
Not as yet.
She shook her head in response.
I was unconscious myself until 10 minutes ago. I woke up to find that you were still under.
Chris nodded, absorbing the information.
We have to get out of here,
he declared, stating the obvious.
I don't intend either of us becoming their guinea pigs.
Excuse me?
It's a bad reference,
Chris said, rising uneasily to his feet. He felt his head swim as he stood upright, and Mary immediately got to her feet to help him.
Their sedative apparently works better on men,
she remarked. Chris gave her a look.
I'm so honored.
Nevertheless, he did not resist when she took his arm. Together, they walked forward slowly. Chris felt himself become stronger as his limbs were forced to work. He headed towards the diamond-shaped panel that appeared to be the only thing of interest inside the cell.
Do you think they are still engaging the Maverick?
Probably.
Chris replied. Inwardly, he hoped that this was not the case. The idea of his ship going to battle without him was more than he could stand. It was bad enough being spirited off his own bridge without having to face the possibility he could be spared the destruction faced by his crew. However, he was confident that Buck would maintain the ship's course to the Vicaris Quasar and save the Maverick from that fate.
If Buck has any sense, he would be making tracks back to the Quasar.
He answered her question, knowing her thoughts were centered on the safety of her son.
You don't think he would try to rescue us?
He might.
Chris never really considered the idea because Buck's first priority ought to be the ship, not two lives out of more than 1,000.
Although I doubt his chances are very good. We are inaccessible to a rescue for any number of reasons. If they've kicked in transwarp, there's no chance the Maverick could keep up.
I see.
She answered softly. Chris met her gaze and then realized that Mary did not appear to be as dispassionate as usual. Was he actually seeing some semblance of fear in her eyes? It was easy to forget that under all that Vulcan tradition, was still a human being capable of feeling a gamut of emotions. He realized that she needed to hear something positive.
It will be all right, Lieutenant. Don't you trust my ingenuity to get us out of this?
If you're attempting to be funny, it's not working.
See if you get a good report from me at your next evaluation.
Captain, if it were possible for either of us to see another evaluation, I would not be overly concerned at its content.
Touché.
He did not look at her as he was more focused on the panel on the wall.
What do you make of this?
Mary leaned in for a closer look herself.
I don't know. I think it's an activation pad of some kind, but I'm no engineer.
This is a pretty good cell they've got us in,
Chris commented, taking his attention away from the panel.
I guess they must have transported us in here, since I don't see any doors or openings we could have been brought through.
It is a feasible way to ensure security. As transport appears to be the only method of entry, they can be assured their prisoners won't be escaping.
Unfortunately for us, Chris mumbled under his breath. He could not say he admired their captor's efficiency as she did. In fact, he wondered if she had any idea how much trouble they were in at all. Chris could not even begin to guess why the intruder had captured him. Why take him specifically? Although he had not voiced it to her, he knew Mary's presence here was a mistake. After all, the beam had been coming towards him. She had inadvertently allowed herself to be taken when she attempted to help him.
"It looks like we have no choice but to wait until they are ready to see us,"
she spoke, snapping him out of his thoughts.
"Somehow, that doesn't make me feel any better."
"I could lie, but I don't think that you'd be any better off."
He wondered if she meant to be smug or was it just typical Vulcan superiority at being the more realistic of them both at their situation. In either case, he did not wish to address the point at the moment. Chris was becoming increasingly irritated at their vulnerable position, nor did he like being buried in this room with no way out.
"There must be some way out of this place,"
he replied, walking alongside the walls.
"Oxygen must come in here for us to breathe."
"True. However, the vent through which it is being filtered may not be of a size to help us."
"Show a little optimism, will you?"
Chris looked over his shoulder at her.
"I rather remain realistic."
"Whatever you say,"
he sighed, deciding that he did not want to argue with her. She would probably win anyway. Instead, he continued his examination of the walls. He ran his fingers against its surface and felt it was cold and smooth. There was a clinical efficiency to it all that disturbed him, although he could not say why. The finish on them was flawless. Dapping against it, he decided it was made of some kind of metal but could detect no seams or rivets that might indicate how it was held together. When the wall reached his feet, it merely curved to form the floor. It almost appeared as if someone gouged the shape of this room from a solid block. If anything, that discovery added to his rising claustrophobia.
"This is a near-perfect cell. There is no way out unless you can tear your way through solid steel or whatever this construction material is."
Mary was staring at the panel and did not answer. Somehow, she knew their escape lay behind this small diamond-shaped device. She knew that if she could deduce its purpose, she could give the captain the answer he so desperately needed. As she glanced at him periodically, Mary noticed he was pacing the wall like a trapped sailor. His growing anxiety was obvious, although she had no idea what to say to him that could possibly ease his apprehension, not unless she understood the function of this device. Suddenly, it came alive before her and emanated a dull white glow.
"Captain, come look at this."
"What is it?"
Chris asked and turned towards her. He had not taken a few steps forward when suddenly, in the center of a room, that familiar beam of blue light shimmered to life around him. Chris was barely conscious of it being around him before it disappeared, taking the captain with it.
"Chris,"
she cried out, unable to keep her fear from him out of voice or mind. It was, however, a futile gesture. He was gone and she was alone. In the blink of an eye, Chris Larrabee was somewhere else. He tried to move his head and found he could not. His head was being held down. Instinctively, he tried to move his hands and found they too were similarly strapped tightly. He also became aware at this point that he was naked because the binders securing his limbs were metal and as cold as the temperature in the room. He tried to ignore the cold since his bare skin was pressed hard against the metal table to which he was secured. He tried to crane his neck sideways to get a better look of where he was, but was unable to do so as he felt something cold pressing hard against his temple. After a number of futile attempts at trying to break free, Chris rested back on the table and observed what he could of his environment. Judging from his angle of perception, he realized that the table he was strapped to was being propped at an angle.
"Don't panic, Chris,"
he told himself.
"It's not as bad as it looks."
An inner voice responded almost immediately.
"It sure as hell looks as bad as it seems."
Chris took a deep breath and forced away such thoughts. At the same time, he tried not to remember anything about his discussions with Buck regarding scientific experimentation on human guinea pigs. Instead, he focused his attention on something else and tried to remember if they had drugged him in order to unclothe him without resistance. Although he nearly sprained a muscle doing it, Chris craned his neck to see if there was a fresh hypo mark on his arm. Despite being unable to see his upper bicep very well from this angle, there did not appear to be one. He remained there for some time and Chris wondered if this interlude was some kind of interrogation technique. Lesser-willed people could break under such tactics, since waiting could be an effective method of torture. Therefore, instead of allowing the time to affect him, he concentrated on seeing what he could of this new place. Above him was a powerful strobe light that beamed directly into his eyes,
making it impossible to see more than a few feet beyond his position. The rest of the room was dark, but he realized if he concentrated hard enough, he could hear movement. Although difficult to define at first, he was soon able to distinguish the sound of feet against the floor, hushed voices using words he could not understand in a language he did not know. He kept the panic away from his mind, telling himself it was possible because Vulcans did it all the time. Thinking about Vulcans inadvertently brought his focus to Mary. Did they have her in a room like this as well? He hoped not. Thinking of her under similar circumstances infuriated him. His surroundings, however, did seem incredibly cliqued. It was a perfectly unimaginative representation of the classic interrogation room. If he was not the victim, it could have almost been laughable. These people could take lessons from the Cardassians or the Romulans. Now they knew how to scare the hell out of you before they actually got to the interrogation. Klingons had no idea, of course. Their methods of torture were so brutal that they were lucky if the victim survived, much less chose to impart any useful information. The Borg did not need to torture. They just assimilated you, so whatever was kept in your mind became theirs to use anyway. The same went for the Jem'Hadar, who did not need to interrogate because their shapeshifter masters knew your secrets before you did.
Captain Larrabee.
A voice spoke out of the darkness. Chris tried not to show the sudden sound surprised him. The voice sounded close, but he could not see anyone.
It's about time someone showed up. I was starting to feel somewhat unloved.
Your attempts at humor will avail you nothing.
That's not the first time I've heard that today.
He remarked softly, wondering if they had been listening into his conversation with Mary during their incarceration.
In that case, I'll just forego the formalities and ask, what the hell am I doing here?
You are here to service us.
It responded with an edge of ice, indicating it did not approve nor like his tone of voice. Chris blinked at those words. They sounded Borg. It was impossible. He had seen parts of their ship and nothing about this felt like a Borg situation. Was it mere coincidence? There seemed to be only one way to find out.
Are you Borg?
We are not the Borg Collective.
The voice answered sharply. If he could have seen the speaker, Chris was sure that the person would be bristling with annoyance. Everything indicated that it disliked the reference intensely.
You sound like them,
he declared, deciding to probe deeper into that aversion. It was the only avenue of inquiry he had at the moment. There was a slight pause.
We have brought you here for a reason, Captain. You can either cooperate with us, or we can take the information straight from your mind, possibly damaging you in the process. We had hoped you would be wise enough to choose the latter.
Quid pro quo. Since you've raided my ship's computer banks, I'm sure you know what that means. Something for something. I may choose to be cooperative if you answer some questions of my own.
You are hardly in a position to be difficult, Captain.
The word made Chris angry, but for the moment, he controlled it. They were correct. He was hardly in the position to make demands since they had the upper hand, but the fact they needed something of him gave Chris a bargaining point. He wished he could see them. It was difficult to maintain this position when he had no idea with whom he was dealing with.
Perhaps not, but kill me and what I know dies with me, and it looks to me like you've been searching for some time already.
What do you know of our needs? You are a minor species, born the only inhabited world of a minor star system. At the moment, your only worth to us is the information you can provide. Do not assume that we need you in any way.
And yet you went to all this trouble to acquire me,
Chris said with a hint of sarcasm.
As I understand it, that's hardly an indication I am expendable.
It is not your place to understand, merely to furnish us with what we require.
The voice retorted vehemently, becoming impatient with the whole process.
Look,
Chris responded.
I am Captain Chris Larrabee of the USS Maverick, service number 378072. That is all I am required to say to you. If you wish to know anything further, I suggest you be a little more flexible instead of engaging me in this verbal joust of superiority.
We are superior in every way. You are nothing to us. Just a waste of flesh in a galaxy populated by waste. You are here to service us, and that is all the consideration you deserve.
He was playing a dangerous game with him, and he knew it. However, he was not about to compromise in any way. This race had butchered hundreds of people and laid to waste Federation colonies without thought or reservation. He was not about to inadvertently help them unless he was given a clearer understanding of the situation. Taking a deep breath, he let out a sigh of defiance and spoke slowly.
Then we have nothing more to discuss.
He had less than a second to regret those brave words before his captors retaliated. Chris was surprised by a sharp jolt of energy that surged through his body like nothing he had ever experienced. Its intensity was so powerful he jerked on the table like a fish gasping for its last breath on the floor of a boat somewhere. The pain alerted every nerve in every corner of his body, causing him to stiffen with excruciating pain. He tried not to cry out because his pride would not allow him to display such vulnerability before the enemy. However, his pride was soon eroded in the wake of such exquisite agony. Nothing could contain the pain that shredded his resolve apart. Chris could feel his teeth digging into the skin of his lips and his fingernails staring into the softness of his clenched palms. He could smell the burning of flesh in his nostrils and wondered how much he could endure. The violence of the charge caused him to salivate. Trickles of fluid ran down his chin and then onto his chest without his even noticing it. The razor-like pain stabbed him with the clarity of 1,000 sharp knives. Chris was quickly pulled into a whirlpool of such agony he did not know anything beyond the white-hot pain piercing through his mind. He didn't even notice when he started screaming. Now Mary felt like the one who was pacing like a trapped sailor. She sat patiently for several hours, waiting for them to return the captain. When he was first taken, she expected them to spirit her away as well. However, after as time passed, Mary became less certain. Finally, she lowered herself to the floor, folding the legs beneath her to calm her fears with meditation. Occasionally, she would glance at the panel wondering if she ought to tackle the task of learning what function it played. The only reason she had not done so yet was the concern that if it was a means of escape, she would have to do it without the captain. She could not leave without him. He had been gone almost into his fifth hour when she suddenly heard the familiar hum of the transporter device. Once again, she realized that the panel had illuminated during the process, and it confirmed her suspicion that the panel was somehow connected to their matter teleportation device. Chris appeared on the floor of the cell, stark naked. His clothes appeared shortly after. Even as she scrambled towards him, she saw the deep purple welts across his back. He was half conscious, and judging by the amount of bruising on his body, she estimated he was in considerable pain.
Chris.
She hurried towards him.
Chris, talk to me.
He did not answer her, which only served to heighten her panic even more. He was lying on his stomach, very still, and for a moment Mary believed the worst. However, as she rolled him over, she noticed his chest rising and falling somewhat raggedly. At least he was still alive. There was blood running down his chin from where a lip was bitten. Her stomach hollowed at the reason for that and knew then that he had been subjected to torture. The bruises on him seemed to be the result of some type of low-power energy discharge. Phasers set on low power and close range could cause similar bruising, although the pain was meant to be extreme. She took his head on her lap, and for a moment, Mary was overcome with a deep sense of anger at what had been done to him. However, this was not the time for anger. He needed tenderness at this moment, and she was determined to provide it. Mary let his head rest on her lap for a long while, allowing him to rest after his ordeal. There was no reason to wake him when it seemed they were not going anywhere. Any ideas she had about escape would simply have to wait until he was better. Mary used the sleeve of her dress to clean the blood off his face, using unusual tenderness she would normally have reserved for William alone. It was not lost on her the concern she had for Chris Larrabee. Despite herself, Mary could no longer deny her regard for him was more than just as her captain. She admired the way he had reached out to her son and gave the boy the guidance she was unable to provide. Most humans found Vulcan children difficult to cope with, but Chris never seemed to have that trouble with William or Billy, as he was more accustomed to referring to her child.
"Oh, I feel terrible."
His voice snapped her out of her reverie. She looked down and saw that he was conscious, if not somewhat disorientated.
"Don't move, Chris. You need to rest."
"No arguments from me,"
he whispered as he opened his eyes and looked into her face.
"Now there's a sight worth waking up to."
Mary smiled faintly.
"Well, you are starting to feel a little better, I see."
"Not much,"
he grumbled, trying to shift to a more comfortable position on her lap.
"Apparently, my overwhelming charm was lost on them."
It never ceased to surprise Mary the arrogance of human males and their ability to make jokes during the most dire circumstances. Chris Larrabee, as she was starting to realize, was a master at both those traits.
"I can't imagine that."
He raised his eyes to hers.
"I see I need to work on it."
It was at this point Chris realized he was naked. Startled, he almost sat upright.
"Chris, you should remain still."
"Lieutenant."
He tried to display as much dignity as a man in the nude could possibly do.
"A captain needs to maintain some degree of privacy, and at the moment, I am feeling somewhat exposed."
Mary turned her back on him, respecting his privacy although it was somewhat redundant. She'd seen enough of him and had to admit, What she saw was impressive. However, there was no need for him to know that.
Captain, were you able to see our captors?
No, they were hidden in the darkness for most of the interrogation. They had me hooked up to a device that discharged low-level energy bursts. No permanent damage, I suspect, but it hurts like hell.
What information did they want?
Nothing they would make specific, and I must admit I was a little too cocky for my own good.
He groaned in pain as he slipped his trousers on.
Okay, I'm partially decent.
She turned around and eyed him with a frown.
Captain, perhaps you should try being not so charming next time.
I'll keep that in mind during the next round.
The next round?
Her brow rose immediately in concern.
I assume that there will be one considering I gave them nothing during the first.
What Chris did not add was their warning to him during his last moments of consciousness. They made it plain that while they had not intended to take Mary hostage, they would not hesitate to use her if it would ensure his cooperation. Chris did not intend to allow that under any circumstances. Somehow, he was going to have to come up with a new plan. Chapter 19. The First. She watched him sleep and knew he was not telling her everything. In the past few hours, it seemed to her that she was learning more and more about him with each passing moment. When had the time come that he had become more than captain to her and she more to him than just his protocol officer? Mary could not tell, but the barrier between them was like a veil whose substance was diminishing as gradually as the shifting of ocean tides. Perhaps it was their entrapment together that initiated this bond between them, like two animals sharing the same cage. Mary could not say for certain, but even as he slept, she could feel him strongly. In all her life, she had only shared a mental link with one other person so acutely, and he was now dead. Sion could always sense the feelings inside her no matter whether where he was. She remembered with a flash of intense pain the moment she knew he died. His death cry had been ripped through her mind as the Borg destroyed him and his ship. To this day, the loss of his Katra was something Mary was unable to fathom. Vulcan souls were meant to be preserved, to take their place with all the others in the place of keeping, not to be discarded to the four winds like a mist. Residues of his self remain within her, but the absolute loss of his living soul was almost as devastating as losing his physical being. Her link with Chris was not like this. She was human, and the mental links created in her mind because of the mind meld between herself and a full-blooded Vulcan still remained. Only a strong emotional attachment could reactivate them, and she could not feel Chris from a distance because he simply did not possess the telepathy to maintain such link. However, when he was near, his emotions were the proverbial open book to her. Prior to their incarceration, her link to him was vague. She sensed something in his regard for her, but nothing Mary could define clearly. Now it was much stronger because his concern for her had escalated and the torture had weakened him considerably. The intensity of his emotions surprised her, and she wondered what she had done to inspire such passion. Although she could not read his mind but rather sense his emotions, Mary became certain Chris was protecting her. She sensed his duplicity earlier and knew he had held something back when they had spoken of his interrogation. The fear she sensed in him was strong, but it was not fear for himself. Chris was afraid for her life and her safety. It did not require any great leaps in logic to understand why that was. Undoubtedly, their captors had threatened her life in exchange for his cooperation. She knew nothing short of death could allow him to voluntarily harm any member of his crew, but in her case, Mary knew Chris's dedication to duty and his feelings for her could become conflicted. Humans could be so illogical at times. The Vulcan philosophy she had been forced to adopt declared it would be sensible to allow her to die. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. However, Chris was not Vulcan. He was human and found it extremely difficult to take this course of action because their emotions interfered with the decision. Mary believed when the time came for Chris to do so, he would be unable to make that choice because he would be hampered by his feelings for her. Of course, he had not spoken of it. She never expected he would. However, she refused to allow him to sacrifice himself and possibly the Federation because of her. The Starfleet officer that she was did not find such an action acceptable. Mary rose to her feet quietly and walked towards the panel. For a long moment, she merely stared at it, wondering if it was wise to proceed any further. She knew nothing about this cell and the surveillance methods employed by their captors. They could be watching her now, and she did not want to provoke them into hurting the captain any more than they had. She did not want him to pay for her misjudgment. As it was, she was now a liability to him. Her very presence made it impossible for him to make a decision without taking her welfare into account. If she was capable of being furious at herself now, Mary would be. What had possessed her to reach for him when the transporter beam enveloped him? Mary was not accustomed to impulse and knew the motivations behind her attempt were for purely personal reasons. She had allowed her emotions to get the better of her and now he was paying for the price. One way or another, she would find a way out of this cell. Mary touched the panel. It did not react. For a moment, she considered how she would proceed. She had been brushing up on her engineering skills and while she would never have Julia's inborn expertise or Alex's vast scientific knowledge, she had been on Vulcan long enough to learn quickly. Being surrounded by super intelligent people made it necessary for her to refine her ability to commit a great deal of information to memory upon first reading. She had no tools to work with and allowed her hand to begin a more physical examination of the panel now that she knew it was not meant to be accessed from inside the cell. She let her fingers slide across the slanted edges, testing the seams for weakness. After a few moments, she found a weak point and paused as she decided what to do next. Taking stock of her options for a short time, Mary reached for one of the hair clips holding her hair out of her face. It was a simple metal clip she had purchased in one of the shops in Jupiter Station. It did not look very formidable but it was definitely strong. In any case, she had little choice in the matter and had to be content with it. She dug its edge into the crack at the base of the panel so that she could pry it open. Mary forced it down gently, adding more and more pressure. It was a few seconds before her efforts displayed any progress when she saw the crack widen and become more visible. She was almost there. Suddenly the edge snapped. The abrupt break propelled the jagged edge of the rest of the clip straight into her hand before she could even react to pull it away. It buried itself deep within her skin with such force and rapidity that the pain took her by surprise before she had a chance to deal it. Instinctively, she let out a soft cry of pain. Chris sat up immediately.
Mary?
She winced in annoyance at having woken him and nursed her bleeding hand while she examined the injury. The broken half of the clip had embedded itself in the flesh below her knuckles. She let herself drop to the floor as she took a closer look.
I'm fine, I just hurt myself a little.
She answered, trying to maintain her dignity in such a ridiculous situation. Chris was by her side in an instant.
Let me see.
It is superficial,
she declared, making it known she did not require assistance. Chris saw a heavy rivulet of red fluid snaking down her wrist despite her best attempts to stem its flow.
It does not look superficial to me, Lieutenant.
He made particular emphasis on that last word to indicate his determination in this matter. Unfortunately, she had to concede to his rank and extended her hand forward reluctantly. Chris took her hand gently and saw the metal clip still protruding from her flesh. She did not answer because he was correct. It was not.
It does, however, look worse than it is. Take my arm with your good hand.
Why?
She asked suspiciously. Chris rolled his eyes.
Are you always so adversarial with your commanding officers?
Just you.
You must be in pain. You're making a joke.
Without saying anything else, he yanked the clip out of the wound before she had time to react. Her nails dug into his arm in a spasm of pain and she let out another cry which cut through him just hearing it. He dropped the broken hair clip onto the floor and wiped her blood on his sleeve. The blood flow from the wound seemed heavier now the obstruction had been removed. Quickly, he tore a small strip of material from his tunic.
What were you doing? No, let me guess, you were trying to get that panel open?
I refuse to comment on the grounds I will incriminate myself.
She smiled wryly, watching him shape the material into a makeshift bandage for her hand.
Lieutenant, while I appreciate your diligence, perhaps waiting for me might have been a good idea.
How so? I know I'm not an engineer, but it could not hurt just to take a look.
I agree.
He nodded as he secured the material with a tight knot.
However, I would rather you not skewer yourself in the process. One of us in bad shape is enough.
I wanted to get us out of here.
Something in the tone of her voice made him look up when she said that. Her eyes, normally devoid of emotion, seemed softer and more fluid.
You have placed yourself in enough danger because of me, Chris.
Chris liked how it sounded when she said his name, especially with a tone that indicated she felt more for him than he had previously thought. He was aware they had crossed some invisible boundary seldom defined by men and women until left long behind. At that moment, he understood that she cared and it was because he was more than just her captain. He realized her concern was far more personal and intimate. For a moment, he did not know what to say and remained silent. Her face softened and Chris saw he need not speak at all because she knew the unspoken feelings he had for her. He reached for her and placed a gentle hand against her cheek. Mary did not move away, neither did she speak. Instead, she raised her hand and placed her palm across his. Everything that needed to be said between them was established by that simple gesture of intimacy. Almost as if they knew what was taking place, Chris saw Mary's eyes widen. He looked behind him and saw the transport beam in the middle of the room, seeking him out again. His gaze returned to her before they spirited him away again.
"I'll be all right,"
he said confidently and knew that most of it was for her benefit. Mary's eyes started to well with emotion and her lips started to quiver as she saw the beam come towards him.
"I'll keep trying to get us out of here."
"I know,"
he answered finally before the beam reached him and took him out of the room. Once he was gone, Mary blinked, trying to come to grips with this ache in her heart and the terrible fear she felt. She sat there for a moment, trying not to worry about him and concentrate on what she had promised before he was taken from her. A short time later, she rose to her feet and faced the panel again with icy determination in her face.
"Let's do this again,"
she whispered once and then set to work. He was in the same interrogation room, although this time, he was fully clothed. Like before, he could not see his interrogators, but he could hear them in the room, whispering amongst themselves as they decided his fate. Chris knew in no uncertain terms they would harm Mary if he was not more cooperative and decided he was going to have to approach this situation from another angle. As much as he disliked doing it, he was going to have to play ball to gain more information about them.
"Captain Larrabee, we trust you're more willing to talk after our previous meeting?"
The same voice boomed in his ears again.
"I don't respond well to extortion, however, it looks like I don't have much of a choice to be stubborn."
"We are glad that you understand your situation. It would be regretful if we had to resort to more extreme measures."
Chris was glad he would not find out what exactly those measures were. He was still trying to recover from the previous ones and he needed to be in somewhat decent shape to effect any kind of escape.
"I don't doubt you will use those measures on my protocol officer if I don't obey. That is how well I understand the situation."
"She is here to service our needs, Captain, not yours."
"Whatever,"
Chris said abruptly.
"Since you have taken all this trouble to make me capitulate, you mind telling me what it is you want to know?"
There was a momentary pause before a response came. Chris strained his eyes to look into the darkness to see a face to which he could attach that voice. Unfortunately, he could see no one. He wondered what reason was there for such secrecy. It was not as if he were in any position to do them any harm if he knew what they looked like.
"As you have already guessed, Captain, we were responsible for the destruction of your colonies along the border of your territorial space."
Hearing them admit it sickened him to his stomach while at the same time firing his anger. However, he restrained his feelings and continued listening quietly.
"We required information about your Federation but found the information retrieval unit on the colonies inadequate for our needs. We took live specimens and similarly found them lacking as they were unable to provide us with what we required. We made these attempts on several colonies and erased all evidence of our presence and our departure."
"Not all evidence," Chris declared.
"We are here on a mission of utmost urgency to our race and we're not concerned with the welfare of an unimportant species."
Once again, Chris controlled his temper.
"So you went to Deep Space 5 and downloaded their computer core?"
"You are correct. Fortunately, the data stored in the station's retrieval unit was far more comprehensive and did give some us valuable insight on how to proceed with the next part of our investigation."
"I don't know what use I can be to you if you've already downloaded a space station's computer core. It probably contains more information than I will ever know."
Suddenly, Chris found that despite the situation, he was extremely interested to know what it was these intruders wanted of him and the Federation.
"The computer core contains factual data which is not what we desire. We have come to investigate the two incidents in which your Federation has encountered the species known as the Borg Collective."
The voice answered quickly. Now Chris was really surprised.
"You want to know about our encounters with the Borg?"
he exclaimed, unable to hide his shock.
"Why?"
"As far as we know, no species of inferior technology has ever defeated the Collective and yet your Federation has done so twice."
"I wouldn't say defeated. In each encounter, we suffered devastating losses."
Chris had no trouble revealing this to his captors. If they had taken the contents of Deep Space 5's computer core, then he was not telling them anything they did not already know.
"Yet they were nonetheless defeated. That is unprecedented and we wish to know how you accomplished this."
"Mostly luck and thanks to some innovative thinking by our starship commanders."
"Yes. In particular, the human known as Jean-Luc Picard, a Federation starship captain.
There was an ominous way about the manner in which they said Picard's name that immediately sent a cold shiver down his spine. Suddenly it hit him. The realization came alive with such inspiration that Chris was struck by the force of his discovery. In an instant, he understood why the intruder had gone to the trouble of taking him alive. They had responded to the broadcast he had sent across space to lure them, not because Discovery was contrary to their purposes in this quadrant. It was because he had sent the signal. Captain Chris Larrabee of the USS Maverick, they did not want a human specimen. They wanted a starship captain, like the one responsible for the Borg destruction at Wolf 359 and then at the Battle of Sector 001. He could be wrong. It would not be the first time, but Chris refused to believe he was incorrect. With instinct he relied upon more steadfastly than logic. He was certain of the truth he just uncovered, but he had to put his theory to the test.
You think because I am a starship captain, I can show you how to defeat the Borg?
We do not need your assistance to defeat the soulless ones. We are here on a scientific study to understand how such a primitive culture can fend off the might of the Borg. Our interest is merely for the purpose of study.
Somehow that protest appeared to be just a little too vehement to be simply arbitrary, Chris decided.
I may be a member of a primitive culture, but I'm no fool. If your interest was purely scientific, you wouldn't have gone to the lengths you have done to accumulate your data. My officers and I deduced some time ago there was a measure of desperation to your actions.
As responding to their unseen anger at his insolence, his body spasmed with pain as he felt the energy discharge striking his body from the table beneath him. Fortunately, after being tortured for hours previously, Chris had developed a small amount of endurance to it. While it hurt beyond description, he found he was able to recover faster than before. He knew his words had struck a nerve with them because they had retaliated like children throwing a temper tantrum.
Okay, since you feel that strongly about it, we won't mention desperation. However, I'm afraid I can't help you. Jean-Luc Picard was able to defeat the Borg because his crew was able to retrieve him after his assimilation. Once his connection to the collective was severed, the nanoprobes inside him were destroyed and his human cells were able to reassert control. The experience allowed him certain insights into the nature of the Borg, insights he was able to use to defeat them.
You are lying. Their consciousness is vast, and inside or not, they would have been able to circumvent what little knowledge he had of them. Your understand is simplistic and in error.
We have a saying in our culture. To know your enemy is to know how to defeat him. Picard knew his enemy. He knew his enemy well enough to outwit them. If you came looking for a superweapon, I'm afraid you are going to be disappointed. The Borg was defeated with nothing more than one man's determination and insight.
Chris waited for a response, but none came. Although he had only heard one voice, he was certain that there were more individuals in the room with him. While not speaking to him, he heard them conferring amongst themselves, trying to decide whether or not they believed him. In the meantime, he took the chance to go over what he learned so far. These intruders were deathly afraid of the Borg, but Chris could not understand why. Their technology proved they could be more than a match for the Borg if necessary. Even if they could not completely defeat the collective, they had enough technology to fend off any Borg invasion.
Picard was the human responsible for destroying the first.
The first?
He asked, confused.
The first from whom the collective originate, that who brings order from chaos.
For a moment, he could not understand to whom they were referring, and then it came to him. Chris had read Jean-Luc Picard's log report of his encounter with the Borg following the failed invasion of Earth. It was an unusual story involving time travel and Zefram Cochrane. Chris had been more interested in Picard's impression of the legendary inventor to take much notice of the rest of the report. However, it did reveal the Borg had a central leader previously unknown to the Federation.
You mean the Borg Queen?
The first.
You keep calling her the first. Of what is she exactly the first?
There was another pause.
She is the first Borg. The original is who began the assimilation process. It was she who injected the first microprobes into another that began the race. She who had independent will where none was meant to be.
You know much about the Borg. Perhaps we could share our knowledge. It's obvious that they are your enemy. We can help each other. I do not know what exactly you are hoping for by interrogating me, but if I knew what you were searching for, I am sure we can find an answer.
We need no assistance from the likes of you. You are not a true life form, only the Kakai are alive.
The voice shouted angrily, but Chris suspected this response was mainly born out of the realization his words rang true.
Kakai? Is that your species?
The Kakai are the natural masters of this galaxy. It is our right to rule and purge the systems of all inferior forms of life.
Chris had heard this so many times from so many would-be conquerors that it was almost corny. Did they never learn anything different to say, or was there some universal manual from which they obtained their litany of tedious rhetoric?
A difficult position to take considering the Borg are the most powerful species we have encountered. I am certain they would object to your claim. You are biological like I am biological, and we all fodder for assimilation if we don't help each other.
The Borg is an accident. Like all accidents, they will be destroyed eventually.
They are not accidents, and it will take far more than arrogance to destroy them. It will take cooperation and mutual understanding.
Chris stated. He knew he had to try and reach them somehow. If the Kakaya considered the Borg enough threat, perhaps they would yield enough to acknowledge that they needed assistance, even from an inferior specimen like him.
We require no cooperation from you or your kind. The Borg will be destroyed. Without the first, they are significantly weakened, and we will make them do our bidding as they were always meant to. We will not make the same mistake twice.
The same mistake?
Chris whispered. Suddenly, he had a very bad feeling about all this.
Yes, you foolish human. It is we who created the first, and we who found the telepath whom you know as the Borg Queen.